All right, so C++ and Beyond 2012, thanks for having me and Channel 9 here again. It's been incredible as expected.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And so what we wanted to do based on the great conversation we had last year was sort of talk a little bit about this year's themes, if there are any, clearly there are. And then I actually asked the community to present some questions, and I'd like to start with that after we kind of get a little bit of your perspective on this year's event and what your themes were and what you think the big problems are you're going to be facing this year in C++.
Well, I ended up speaking about concurrency and parallelism in most of my talks, from atomics and the memory model, which is just basic nuts and bolts that just people do have to know now, and the underpinnings of those things, to tomorrow's talk on concurrency in C++ 11 in 2012 and beyond, and what's coming up in standardization. And so it's interesting that that's a common theme, and I think I see that in many of the other talks, not all of them, but at least I've ended up talking about concurrency, which I didn't originally plan to do, but there's a lot to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, this is, I thought we had a really strong program in 2010. I thought we had a stronger program in 2011. And I think this year, actually, I thought today was an unbelievably killer day, possibly because I didn't give any presentations. But Herb and Andre were unbelievable today. And I just think that somehow this seems like the meatiest, technically deepest version of this conference that we've had. And I think that it's just really, really interesting. If you love C++, this is just a really good show to be at. And I thought the last two, like I said, were good as well. But this one's only two-thirds over so far, but I'm just very excited about it. So again, probably because I wasn't speaking today, so.
You did a great job yesterday. I liked the universal references and the insights that brought to how to use move semantics, or what looks like move semantics but isn't,
right,
and understanding what this is.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Enough with the self-congratulation here. I would say, my understanding of your question is, you know, what has happened since last edition of this conference, you know, approximately 365 days ago, up until now, you know, what's going on? I'm seeing a number of phenomena that are interesting. One being that there's a good adoption of C++ 11. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has become fairly clear that C++ 11 has injected, has been a very good mother engine to push the language forward for probably a decade going forward, which some people may hate, some people may love, definitely I'm on the side of people who love this, because C++ is definitely a very strong language for a vast category of applications, of which let's say area on the landscape of applications I think is expanding. And again, I'm getting back to the thesis of my last year's comment on this, which is processor scaling has effectively ended in frequency, and you know, something's got to give. It's like there's so much pressure in terms of things that need to be done in computing in general, and in terms of you know, number of applications that are out there, and in terms of the size of data that needs to be pure and simply crunched through, you know, rummaged through, if you wish, that something's got to give. And what's got to give is, you know, there's the expansion number of cores, but I don't see that as a very you know, clear kind of road going forward. There are very difficult problems in that direction. And I'm also seeing a push for, you know, quality in C++. I'm seeing a push for, you know, better usage of idiomatic constructs. And again, last year I've seen very good adoption. I'm very happy, you know, that I'm totally happy with Facebook, which has been totally on board with upgrading compilers and allowing usage of new features. So I'm a happy camper, because there's so much adoption inside Facebook of C++ 11, and to such great effect. And I've also seen, again, an increased presence of an everlasting theme in C++, which is efficiency. Efficiency, you know, everybody either cares for everybody, efficiency is either important or they're so convinced it's important, it doesn't even matter. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So everybody thinks efficiency is important to them if they're using C++. And for the most part, I would say the trend is clearly that we need to squeeze more from what we have, as opposed to, efficiency is the mind of people, right? It's not only in the CPU. It's the CPU is the opportunity to come with creative approaches to doing things efficiently. So I'm seeing a huge theme there in the developing efficient software. And, to get into self-congratulatory mode, I would say I'm very glad I prepared these two-part series on efficiency, because there's actually there's a lot of folklore, and there's a lot of, let's say, dated advice, and there's a lot of pure and simple wrong advice on how to write efficient code in C++. And I'm very happy I took the time to do some research on this topic. And we ended with in a very funny situation. So it was 2 months before the show, and we're like, do you have enough material? I'm having some, I'm having this, I'm having that. Oh, actually, I have more material than I could master.
Yeah.
So actually, I could take some of your time if you wish. And then, let me look through what I have here, what materials I have. And all of a sudden, all the three of us had more material than time.
Yeah.
All three of us.
I don't think that's ever happened before. Actually.
Yeah, this was
you could
first.
Easily have filled a fourth bag.
Yeah,
it was kind of funny. So anyhow, I'm seeing these themes. Good adoption. I'm seeing that C++ does deliver. It's a good incremental improvement over what was there already that was good. And I'm seeing a push towards better quality, faster development, and better efficiency.
If you're phrasing it as what's different from last year, I would agree with those things. And also looking back to where we were in August of last year, we had just shipped the standard and were waiting for its ratification. It was just being published around that time and being ratified to be published. And then everybody wonders what's next. So from the standardization point of view, usually what happens when you ship a standard is then there's this lull. And last time we took almost 5 years off to let the compilers catch up, because we were more out in front than we are this time, which is an improvement this time in front of existing implementations. And this time it was interesting because we had our next standards meeting after the August meeting last year was in February. And that had two strikes against it in terms of attendance. The first was it was just after we shipped a standard, and so usually fewer people come. And usually we'd get 50, 55 people or so at our meetings. And so we expected fewer because of that. Second, it was in Hawaii, which is far away and a perfect example of manager denial. It's you are not going there. You're not really working.
That's right. In February.
In February.
Yeah, you're going to work hard in Hawaii in February.
Never mind that you tell them truthfully that you're going to be in windowless rooms most of the time and so forth.
Yeah.
There are reasons, two major reasons why you expect attendance to go down. We had 73 people show up. Intel sent 5 or 6 people. Microsoft did. NVIDIA showed up with a couple of people who don't usually attend. There was so much interest in C++. And so many new proposals. Three months later, we had a whole subgroup meeting just on concurrency and parallelism and some networking with another about 50 people, which was a third of regulars, a third who had come for the first time to the Kona meeting, and a third brand new experts, from world-class experts from around the world. And it is clear that we are actually accelerating, not decelerating, which is both really wonderful and great, and a surprise, but also kind of tiring, but there's so much to do. Now, when it talks about efficiency, in that meeting in concurrency and parallelism, one of the things that came out was that we decided there's three major kinds of hardware parallelism we want to exploit, that we could exploit. The one is multiple cores, it's the obvious one. Attached to those cores are vector units. So each core may have, 4, 8, 16 lanes of data parallelism, if you can extract that. That's out in the mainstream. And then beyond that, the next thing is data parallel on basically virtual cores or lanes that can't support the full language, and that's GPUs today. It was a very clear decision in the room, and a very clear sentiment of the committee was that in this next revision, we need to directly address not just multi-core, but data parallel, the vector units on those cores. And we can look at GPUs some other day. They're still in flight, because the hardware is in such motion, it's not an appropriate time to standardize. But clearly, we need to talk about this, because on a regular desktop, on your notebook, on your tablet that you've got there, you have multiple cores, and you have the vast majority of the parallelism is in the data parallel lanes. We want to exploit that, because you probably got 32 or 64-way parallelism on that tablet that you've got there. We need to be able to do that because we're in the business of exploiting the hardware. So even standardization, instead of waiting for another 5 years, and then let's see if we can get around to doing something, is just moving right along and is setting aggressive timelines, not just for a next standard, but to do smaller deliverables, to ship a file system library asynchronously from the rest of the standard, to ship new libraries in smaller chunks sooner. And so we actually expect to start shipping things as early as next year. Great. New editions. So it's exciting times, because we thought we were going pretty fast, and now we're accelerating.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to mention one other thing, too, because one of the things I've noticed is that last year, when the audience was talking about C++ 11, it was like, well, when C++ 11 gets here, which mm-hmm. it turned out to be a few days later, whatever it happened to be. Yeah. Everybody talks about it now like it's been around for a while, we're very comfortable with it, and we have background survey data that show that of the people in this room, over half of them are allowed to use each of about a dozen different features that we asked them about. So not only is the language here sort of mentally, but you talked about adoption rates. It's very clear from the people in this room, they are permitted to use a huge number of C++ 11 features in production code right now. So they're not just playing around with it, they're actually shipping products with it. So it's a really noticeable difference to me about the way the room's talking about C++ 11 now, as it's here, we're using it, compared to last year was like, it's coming.
Yeah. And last year also, it was, it's coming, and getting permission to use, I'm not really allowed to use auto or lambdas, even if my compiler does have. What a difference year to year.
Yeah.
And these are and some of the same people in the same companies. Yeah, yeah. There are different people from the similar companies, and you can see that progress. It's really rapid.
Yeah. It's much faster than I ever thought it was going to be.
Excellent. So you mentioned libraries, and that segues beautifully into the first question asked on the Channel 9 thread. I asked some Niners to, hey, the three amigos are going to be together. Let's ask questions. So the first one is from .Tom, who's a C++ developer. And his question is, if we leave the syntax alone for the next couple of years, how long before we can get an official library technical report out there with types covering XML, hierarchical file systems, and HTTP web services?
File system might be next year. We'll see. They're working on it hard. Mm-hmm. Beam and Dawes in particular had something based on Boost File System, V3, and bringing it for, I think it was V3, if I've got the Vs right for the...
I think it is V3.
Yeah. And they're working on that quite aggressively, so we'll be looking forward to that. XML, that's a big chunk, and that's actually part of the effort to have more portable C++ libraries and encourage that. That one I expect to take a bit longer, unless somebody would like to contribute Xerxes and go through and develop a big proposal or something like that. Okay. But file system is more short term. As for the language moving much in the next couple of years, don't worry about that. We're currently planning a revision of the standard, which would include language changes to be ratified roughly in the 17 timeframe, C++ 17, which means we'd have them in pretty good shape for 15. And then if that sounds like a long time, A, it's not, it comes really fast, it's shorter than the last release cycle, but B, it's deliberate, because you want the language to stabilize more and not change so much rapidly, because that's invasive in compilers, you have to wait for your compiler vendor to update it, while we want to focus on libraries in much shorter time frames, including starting next year. So we're trying to be agile too, and focus on the things that can tolerate change better, which is libraries, and where the things that we're being asked about can really shine, because we have a strong language, especially C++ 11 with what has changed from C++ 98. There are still things we'd like to do, but we have a complete package that is as easy to use in many auto and lambdas and such things. Very strong language, let's use it to build libraries instead of keeping tinkering.
I think probably for your viewers too, it would be worthwhile to refer them to the one of the keynotes you gave at Going Native 2012, because you actually talked about the library collection initiative that you've got going on. And I think it's too much to describe right here, because you already gave a talk on that. Yeah. But you know, one of Herb's projects has been to basically find a bunch of open source projects, and the people are putting them together and bring them together so it'd be much more discoverable and usable under a common license and stuff like that. And that's going to be really useful for the community.
That's amazing, because now you guys have not seen these questions, but it segues beautifully into the third question, which is, since you asked that question, and this could be for, you know, all of you, but certainly Herb as well, you know, have you gotten any unexpected requests? In other words, you asked for, you know, what libraries should be standardized, which is like sort of one of the questions that you asked at Going Native. Have you gotten any unexpected requests? What has the response been like? I mean, are you getting a lot of interest and a lot of...
Short answer, response is good. Everybody realizes the need for it. They've got to step up and create a place where these can go, where, a home for them. And so we're working on that. I don't know of specific requests because the thing, people know what they need. Look at the Java and .NET libraries, look at the frequently used parts of that that aren't in the C++ standard library, and there's a first good first cut. Look at the Python libraries that are very popular, that are easy to acquire and are just there. That's the kind of place, so we know what the needs are, what people are actually doing. And so I can't think of a specific thing. Have you guys encountered anything, any particular libraries that you didn't expect that people have asked for?
Something surprising? Probably not. They're like the usual suspects for the most part. Networking would be a big one.
Somebody asked today about database access. I mean, but they're not really surprised, like networking, database access, file system. It's not difficult to figure these things out.
XML is a perennial poster child.
Yeah.
Portable graphics, some sort of graphics ability. Mm-hmm. People ask for that. That one's, I think, more of a stretch goal. But there's certainly a lot that we can add. Certainly, you ought to be able to write an HTTP server in not 500 lines. Mm-hmm. You ought to be able to do that in like 10 lines.
Or make an HTTP web request in 2 lines.
Yes. So for example, some of the work that Microsoft is doing with the Casablanca incubation right now for Azure, for cloud computing, that currently works on Windows and Visual C++ and soon will work on other platforms and compilers because we're making it portable code and we'll make it publicly available and open. That's the kind of thing that can be contributed to this effort. Because you need to be able to do that as part of the standard library so people can just assume, people who write books and articles about C++ can just assume C++ can do this. It's part of portable C++. You can just assume those libraries will be with an implementation. So that means getting them to the standard. The first thing is to get them out in the open, and then we have the standards process that we're working with closely.
Excellent. So, you know, when I posted this not long after it landed on the Reddit CPP subreddit, and that actually turned into this big conversation about static if, which, of course, Andre's static if I had a hammer at Going Native was quite amazing. And you've written about it, and people know your tremendous interest in this.
I read it.
And yes, it's indeed. So let me ask you, why is static if such a big deal? And if it is such a big deal, why isn't it? Actually, this is what was asked. I'm not asking this. I'm asking this on behalf of the Redditor. Why is it such a big deal? And if it is such a big deal, why isn't it being standardized? So I guess you could start with why is this a big deal?
Let me answer the B part first, and then you can answer the first part.
Sure.
Why isn't it being standardized? Actually, I solicited a proposal from Andre and Walter, and they couldn't come to the Kona meeting, but I personally presented it. And the feedback in the room, even Bjarne was potentially interested in it from the point of view of this may be the only way to get a version of concepts, like a concepts light, into C++ 17. There's no other way we'll get concepts or anything like it into this major revision of the standard. So this is early days yet, but it has been presented. There is some interest. We now need to follow up, and these things do take time and several cycles, but it is being proposed. Now, part of the reason was because of your talk, and because in this interview last year, I think it was, I asked you, what do you think would be your favorite feature you think is missing from C++?
Right.
And without hesitation, before the words were out of my mouth, you said static if.
Right. So just for the people who don't know all the deal about static if, so the basic idea is adding a new construct to the language that would essentially guard at declaration level arbitrary portions of code with compile time computable conditions. Like you say static if, Boolean condition, and you put whatever code, and again, it's at declaration level, it's not only inside a function or whatnot. Could be at top level, namespace level. And of course, there's an else. And that would be the first use case of static if. The second use case, by the way, so the most interesting context for the first use case would be inside of a class definition or a template class definition, as it were. So you have a class template, and then you have static if, and you may turn on and off different portions of the class depending on various conditions satisfied or not by the instantiation types.
Could constrain your templates.
Constrain your templates.
In a very
templates.
Expressive way.
And the second application is more direct and goes straight to the point of lightweight concepts. And that means you can actually guard the function declaration. You say, you know, you have a function template declaration, and right in between the closing paren of the parameter list and the open curly, if any, of the function definition, you can insert an if, and then follows a Boolean condition that's computable during compilation, and that could use whatever types were mentioned in the function declaration so far. And this is important, because otherwise you can't. If you put a static if before, you don't have access to those parameters. So this other syntax is also necessary. So I have syntax one, static if, code inside, then we have syntax two, declaration qualified by the static if. So this is the basic plot. Once we have the basic plot, the obvious question is, all right, you know, what's the deal here? And the deal is, incidentally, we've had a lot of extremely positive experience in D about this feature. It's been a lifesaver. And this feature was introduced at a time when Walter and I were thinking, you know, so the serverless concepts were already sort of starting to derail. And Walter and I were clearly recognizing the necessity of having some form of constraining templates in D. But at the same time, we're seeing that you know, the heavyweight concepts that C++ went for were too, you know, too much. You know, they didn't carry their weight properly. So you know, there's some discrepancy in there in terms of power to weight ratio. So we definitely decided. I'm seeing smiles here.
No, very expressive.
That's right. Trying to be.
And we did in fact step back from the brink and say, you know, we don't think we've got this quite right yet. Let's put it aside and not standardize it yet.
To be very honest, I think it was a very good call. And you know, I can't fathom to think what would have happened if probably C++ would not have been standardized today if that train continued to. You know, I'm thinking it would have delayed everything like by so long, and it would have made everything so big and difficult. Anyhow, so you know, let's not explore like these what-if scenarios. But getting back to the question, well, you know, what's so cool about it? We have had tremendous experience with lightweight concepts in D. They're everywhere, and everybody uses them. So on a very practical level, I can say from sheer experience that they do very well. Now, you know, there comes the obvious question. So enable if, which has been standardized, does supplant to some good extent some of these. And to this, let me try a little metaphor here. Not a parallel. Can you do virtual functions in C?
That's my favorite metaphor.
Is it? I'm sorry, I stole it.
Your metaphor.
So does it qualify as a metaphor?
Yes.
All right. So metaphor.
Personally.
Can you do virtual functions in C? The clear answer is a thundering yes. There's pointers to functions. You can pass pointers to objects and pointers to functions. You can cast legally objects to the first member, even in C++, and definitely also in C. So you can actually cast. You can implement inheritance if you wish with the appropriate casting paraphernalia. You could do some macros on top of that to put that cherry, the proverbial cherry on top of it all, and you have virtual functions in C. Hey,
you can implement your own vtables in C. Bjarne did. It was called Cfront.
Right. You know, and you know, the obvious question is it worth it? And the sheer fact that instead of all of that mechanics, you can just plop a virtual in there and, you know, not have to think about it, but instead think in terms of the abstraction you can build on top of that, because this is the point. The point is at what level is your brain thinking at the moment, and as soon as you can actually plop a keyword there and essentially, you know, like Baron Munchausen, you just pull yourself out of the morass of, you know, pointers to functions and casts and stuff. You pull yourself out of that mud, and you get into a level where, yeah, I have dispatch now. You know, it's a done deal. And now what do I build on top of it? And then come all these wonderful patterns and whatnot. So the same kind of value is added by static if. static if brings the same kind of value. I would say it's, you know, in terms of, you know, all of these measures, it would be of equal power added as virtuals were back in the day for C++
in the 90s. One thing that occurs to me is that much of what, a lot of the things that static if enables you to say directly is stuff that we use metaprogramming for now. And, you know, enable if is sort of a form of that. And I think template metaprogramming, it's not that it's evil and it's bad, although certainly there are things that could make your hair stand on end that aren't really great style, but yes, it will work. Yes, the templates are that powerful and you can do it. But I almost view every case I see pretty much, most of them, of template metaprogramming as showing where people want something, a feature so badly, they're willing to do things in such a difficult way in order to get that feature. So to me, they're almost an indicator of popular metaprograms are indicators of missing features in the language. Certainly, Lambda, that was true of Boost Lambda, which showed, by example, just how hard and what the limits were of doing it as a library. And I think perhaps enable if and things like
And what about Eric Niebler's Boost for Each? I mean, come on, right?
Mm-hmm. What, you don't like macros?
No, but you know, my point was that Eric went to like incredible contortions such a simple abstraction, it was an it was a slam dunk to say, you know what, this belongs to the language.
Excellent. So this again just beautifully flows into a relatively long but excellent question from Matt PD. By the way, it was Zippy V that asked the library's question. I'd like to call out their names. So Matt PD, who's a C++ developer and one of the most enthusiastic people I've experienced online. He's all over the C++ Facebook group, always posting comments and links and stuff. His question is kind of long, but he has a question regarding a future metaprogramming facility, and actually there's more about metaprogramming in here, but namely a possibility of standardizing static loops. And he said it might go hand in hand with what you were just talking about with static conditional expressions as opposed to static if to a future standard. And then he goes on to talk about some examples of why that makes sense. So can you talk a little bit about, is there any thinking along the lines of that type of thing?
I think we talked about this, but I do remember this specifically coming up in the Kona discussion about static if at the C++ standards meeting, because one of the obvious things when you have any new feature is say, well, okay, if this is a special case of something, why not do this other general case? And there can be a good reason, but you want to know what that answer is. If you have static if, why not static while and static for and static do?
Static switch.
Yeah, there you go. Which you can implement in static if. And the short answer was, I think that you agreed with this, because I think we talked about it, was that the motivation was less. Now, there are some interesting examples, and perhaps he has a few in that thread. I haven't seen it. But certainly, the static loop constructs are of a very different nature than static if. So doing static if is not directly an argument for doing those two while we're at it. So static if, it solves its own problem very nicely, and this would be something very different. In general, I love to see examples because they help drive the conversation. I tend to be leery or skeptical initially, but I'm always willing to be convinced of adding more features for template metaprogramming, because mostly they're a symptom of you're trying too hard to do something that should be in the language. So rather than enable more metaprogramming, let's see what the features are, missing features are. Having said that, there could very well be compelling features as to why this is a good idea. But it should answer the question of, is it right to encourage metaprogramming? If so, there should be specific examples that we're enabling.
Well, here's an experience point. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
A simple experience point is that so far we got away in D by without implementing static for each. You know, it was a deliberate decision. It was exactly along the same lines. It was like, you know what, so we have static if, which all of a sudden, like, you know, rose the level of expressiveness all to a new level. And then, you know, the implied question was, would static for each raise things to yet another level? Without negating that might be the case, I could say we got away without implementing static for each. The semantics of expanding things in a loop are odd because you have the, you know, implied or expressed modification of the loop counter, which is, you know, And the obvious point there is that you can always do with recursion what you can't do with iteration. And recursion is is a sort of
Are you talking runtime recursion or compile time?
Compile time recursion. Right.
Okay.
So you can do with compile time recursion what static for each would do. And let me actually emphasize an interesting side point. I would say static looping is not very useful unless you have a web of supporting facilities in mm-hmm. the language and or the standard library. For example, why would you ever want a static for each? Maybe you want to generate a table of tangent values. Well, maybe then you need tangent evaluation during compilation. So that's mm-hmm. that's a thing, right? Or maybe you want to iterate through all members of a class and implement proxies for them. Like you want to check before and after logging, whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you want to
reflection.
Iterate through, yeah, do some reflection. You know, I'm trying to delay the use of the word because it's become so loaded, right? So maybe mm-hmm. you want to do some, let's say, compile time reflection. But in that case, you need a whole web of support from the compiler in terms mm-hmm. of it's got to give you indexed access to the members of a class. It's got to give you the types of arguments of functions. So it's got to give you during compilation a host of stuff that you can use in that static loop. Without those, I would say static loops would have very limited usage.
I think it's also important to bear in mind that you're shifting a bunch of work into compilation. There's no debugger for compilation. So if something goes wrong, if you don't get the output that you want, you have no way to really you can't step through a loop during compilation unless people develop entirely new kinds of debuggers that reach out into the data structure to the compiler to try to figure out what's going on. So I think people tend to get very enthusiastic about these template metaprogramming techniques without recognizing that fundamentally it's almost like saying, okay, run this program and I will look at the output and either like it or I don't. And if I don't like it, I have no idea how it was developed. I actually have to go back to the source code and mentally try to figure out, you know, what was going on. I can't wait for people to want, you know, multi-threaded template metaprogramming. That would be sort of cool to sort of try to imagine in your head yeah. how all these templates are expanding simultaneously.
I don't think this is such an insoluble problem. Indeed, we have a pragma that prints the expansion of whatever the template did. So there is a pragma that says, you know, you compute a string, and you get to compile the string,
mm-hmm.
Which is another feature that would be cool to have for, but, you know, I'm not pushing that hard. But mm-hmm. essentially, you have a pragma that says, you know, show me this thing during compilation on the standard output, and you get to examine it. It's a very crude but extremely effective method of debugging.
It's printf level debugging.
It's printf level debugging.
It's not the same as a debugger.
But you know what? Printf level debugging has earned its own respect, okay?
But there's a reason people develop debuggers.
There is a reason.
I mean, printf only takes you so far.
I agree.
The other thing I thought you were going to say when you talked about shifting work to compile time was, ain't there enough there already? So compile times and build times are already an issue. Now, partly that's because of the build model. So we're looking at interesting solutions in the standard space around modules. And people are doing some very interesting experiments and work to see if we can do significantly better than pre-compiled headers in a standard way. So we're looking at that actively, which is nice. We have a module subgroup that's active. Doug Greger is chairing that. And he has some interesting ideas, as well as his colleagues, and David van der Voort and others who are working with him. But when you talk about putting more work at compile time, there can be good reasons for that, but you should also immediately be thinking, carries its freight. Like, this is an expensive time. And so bear that in mind. There are things you don't necessarily just want to shove to compile time, because the more you do at compile time, the faster your runtime is, yes, but.
But that's the kind of trade-off that engineers can make on their own. They can say, you know, do I want to pay up front every time I build in exchange for having to pay less at runtime? Or do I not want to make that trade-off?
True, except to the degree that, for instance, things like the standard library start to depend on those features, in which case build times of everything goes up, including of existing programs when compiled with a C++ 17 compiler. We don't want to do that to people excessively.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing can happen if you're not careful.
Yeah.
We've been careful until now. But.
At that point, it becomes a market forces issue. You know, there's going to be a better motivation for implementers to find better ways to accelerate compilation of templates.
Those lazy implementers always. Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring out, and this isn't quite along the lines necessarily of a static for each or static loop, but do bear in mind, and I learned this from these guys here at CNB last year, the virtual here when we were in Banff. and I think it was from Andre, it might have been from Scott, when one of you mentioned that ConstExpert was really a fourth language in C++. Mm-hmm. Which one of you was it who said that? Okay, thank you, Andre, because I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And you know what? And that frightened me at first, and it puzzled me because I hadn't heard that. And then I realized it's true. Because you have functions, you have classes, and you have compile-time polymorphism templates as your three forms of abstraction in C++. So functions, dynamic polymorphism with virtual functions, and classes, and then compile-time polymorphism with templates. And ConstExpr is not like any of those. It is a fourth language, which is basically doing interpretation at compile time.
Yes.
And there are limits in what you can do, but I know that the people who originally proposed ConstExpr proposed something which was a considerably simpler and simpler to implement, might I add, feature. And what has actually been standardized is much more complex. And you can take that as either much more complex and more difficult to implement if you're an implementer, or you can take it as much richer and expressive and lets me do all sorts of things.
Or you can take it much more open for abuse.
Yes, for use. So legitimately, there are still constraints on what you can do in a ConstExpr function. But it turns out, if you're looking for things like static loops and metaprogramming, look at ConstExpr once you get compilers that implement it, because it's probably the most difficult feature in all of C++ 11 to implement, as far as I can tell, now that concepts are out. It's the big one, and that wasn't recognized by everybody at the time. Once you get compilers that implement that, you can do a lot at compile time. You may well be surprised, because it is really a fourth language.
New in C++. I'm going to mention again the same caveat I mentioned last year, too, just for people who may not be aware of it, because we talk about all this stuff that happens during compilation. But ConstExpr functions only execute during compilation if they can. So if you actually, one of the mistakes you can make is to write a ConstExpr function that can't be evaluated during compilation and use it in a context which allows for runtime execution, and you have a runtime executed function. Mm-hmm. And I think people will actually end up using it that way in some cases, and there are legitimate uses for it being that way. But I think it's important that people don't get the impression that if you write a ConstExpr function and if for some reason it can't be executed during compilation, then your program won't compile. The fact is your program might compile. It depends on the calling context.
You can force static evaluation. Like you assign the result to an enum.
No, this is what I'm saying. But the point is if you use it in a context which requires compile time initially, then it won't compile. Yeah. But if you use it to initialize a variable,
yep,
and it's not something like static const, then guess what? You'll be fine.
Yep. And as soon as you have comments like, oh, and you can force static compilation, you can assign it to an enum, now you're talking about template metaprogramming tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Because
that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, but yeah,
so enjoy.
I'm very familiar with such, indeed. I think the counterpoint to this fourth language being sort of, it's, I wished there was no fourth language, no fourth and fifth element. I wish that we could have done within the language whatever needs to be done. Mm. So, why would I learn an arbitrary set of limitations and quirks and, tricks and stuff when I could actually say I want to use, regular C++ for this stuff? Like, why do I have to implement factorial, for example, as the absolute classic example of the metaprogram or whatever? Why do I have to implement factorial in a certain way for it to be computable during compilation? I assume it's going to be a recursive call and a use of ternary operator, because that works, right? Mm-hmm. Return. So if you want to write factorial as a ConstExpr, you would have to use return. Mm-hmm. It's one return, and you would use question mark and colon and recursion. That's
right.
It. But if you write perfectly equivalent code that actually uses an innocent for loop,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Or if it uses an if statement, all of a sudden that doesn't work. Why, what's going on? I mean, why do I need to learn this? It's completely arbitrary. It's a rote memorization. So, this is a counterpoint to this being interesting. I would not classify it as interesting.
Certainly, I'm not advocating it. I just described it as the most difficult to implement feature in all of C++ 11. But in the context of somebody who's interested in metaprogramming facilities, this is something new, and as it rolls out,
definitely
will enable them to do some things they couldn't do otherwise,
exactly,
even if they can't directly do loops, which was the original question. Yeah, they should know about it.
After a talk I gave about compile-time regular expressions using regular normal strings, then code generation and stuff, all done in D because it makes it very simple to do so. Somebody did come at me and said, you know what, there's this const expert in C++, and I presume I could take a pointer to character and do all that processing with const expert and generate an automaton and all that stuff. That can't be unheard. I can't forget that. It's dominating my nightmares right now. It's a recurring dream, if you wish.
So I mean, I know you're very tired. You guys had a long day today, but Matt did type a lot of stuff here. I'd recommend reading his thread. I mean, he links to the name of the article is Agner's Optimization Manual. Optimizing software in C++.
Yep.
And then Agner says, in C++ template metaprogramming, loops are implemented as recursive templates. Why is template metaprogramming so complicated? Because the C++ template feature was never designed for this purpose. It just happened to be possible. This is according to Agner.
Mm-hmm. Quite true.
And he goes on to say, if the D language allows compile time if statements called static if, but no compile time loops. So that was the question we had asked earlier.
Right.
We can only hope that such a feature becomes available in the future. Anyway, he contends that if there are, if you do have static loops implemented, you can make the implementation of certain other functions, linking back into his document, easier, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the moral of the story is it's awkward today to do things in template metaprogramming. It's very, very difficult. People want to do these things.
Right. So he says even in D, because of the lack of static loops, you can't actually. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me start. But I recommend anyone who's interested in performance to read Agner's Guide to Optimization. You may want to publish that link in the in the blurb with the. I have all respect, and I'm very honored that Agner hopped on the forum and asked questions and stuff. So I'll definitely read what he had to say, because I think he's making a very good point. If he finds like a use case that can't be done otherwise, then definitely it's going to be huge. I presume that at least in the D language, you actually can get away with recursion without static loops. Static if is an enabler. I think static loops are more of a convenience, right? So let me put it in that bin for now. But I'll definitely take a look.
Okay. One thing I want to mention, too, because I think the question said, there's a lot of people clamoring for this kind of stuff. My experience is that the people who are interested in template metaprogramming are utterly convinced that everybody is interested in template metaprogramming. It is, I'm sorry, but it is a very small minority of C++ developers who do template metaprogramming. And in my experience over the past 5 or 6 years, the number of people who want to join that elite group is not large. More people are repelled by the idea than are attracted by it. So I think in terms of, especially the standardization effort, I would not be encouraging the standardization committee to be investing a huge amount of time in improving the template metaprogramming or other kinds of metaprogramming facilities. It serves a very small community well, but I have not yet become convinced that that community produces stuff of such value to the rest of the community that it's worth having the standardization committee as a whole devote a lot of time to that. So people have done remarkable things with template metaprogramming. I have tremendous respect for what has been shown to be done, especially Andre sort of started things in some sense on a widespread scale, although he wasn't the very first person who did it. And there's been some unbelievable things that have been done. But the fact is, in my experience, the vast majority of C++ programmers cannot make heads or tails of template metaprograms and don't have a lot of interest in being able to make heads or tails of template metaprograms. So it can be an unbelievably powerful tool in the hands of what you like to talk about as the elite priesthood. But I don't see any evidence over the past 5 or 6 years that it's becoming a more broad-based trend.
Would you classify static if as a metaprogramming tool or a more of a regular programming
tool? I think of static if as much more like the macro preprocessor with, pound include, or not pound include, but, if.
Sane macros,
if, yeah.
Sane.
Yeah, I don't think that's, I mean, technically it's the metaprogramming,
but
I wouldn't call it that. What I will say is, interestingly, because you mentioned enable if earlier, and what's interesting is, although there's enable if, there's no enable if else. So if you actually ever want to say, currently, if you want to say, if this is true, do this, else do that, you actually can't say that with enable if. You have to say, if this is true, do this, and then you have to say, if this is not true, then do this. So you've got the same condition in both places. It's unbelievably, well, it's just bad. And static if with else would simplify that kind of stuff. And so I think of that as the same level, really, as fairly simple macro stuff.
And I don't think of it as metaprogramming. In fact, one of the things I kind of like about static if is that it will make us do less metaprogramming.
Yes, it allows us to do less. Like enable if is a solution coming from the metaprogramming realm. And also
with the corresponding syntax.
With the syntax to boot, yes.
Yeah.
And also like...
And very useful.
All of this lightweight constants, like constants without the pain, it would be a huge improvement to just attach an if to function and template declarations and just say, you know, this applies to these cases.
Yeah.
And it's extremely simple to understand for anyone, you know, without any template, background.
Yeah.
One thing about metaprogramming, and we seem to have spent most of the hour talking about metaprogramming, but since we're there, let's talk about it some more. I am glad that somebody named the elephant in the room, Scott did. Yes, the metaprogramming community is very vocal and very small and very much a priesthood and maybe overestimates the amount of people who are interested in it. Many people run screaming. I have seen,
most
Bjarne has seen.
People run screaming.
I have seen, and Bjarne has seen, that as, for example, Boost has used more metaprogramming, it has delivered genuinely useful features that way. I have seen at customer sites, and talking to customers, people not want to use Boost because of that. Because when you do metaprogramming, it is true you can have the priesthood that creates the tools that other people can benefit from and use, right? So you use enable if and you use it correctly, and things just work above you, and they don't even need to know enable if is involved most of the time, which is great. Unfortunately, too much of the time, this stuff leaks into the programmer's face, where if they don't type things just correctly, or they have a bug in their code which causes a template instantiation error, good luck with that. Because now it's in their face, and they have to figure out the template metaprogramming and this complexity. And it really gives C++ a bad name.
If this is
held up as correct C++ style, this is what you should be doing, then people would legitimately say, I don't want to do that. That should not be what we hold up as mainstream C++ style. I know that there are people who love metaprogramming, don't get me wrong, but it really ought to be viewed as something that we do because we have to, because there's something genuinely useful that's missing in the language, and a beacon to shine on what's missing in the language that we should add as a language feature, rather than we do it because we love it. Unfortunately, I mean, we're all geeks, and some of us love complexity way too much. But I would put in a plea to fear template metaprogramming as much as love it, and not just fall in love with it for its complexity, and look at this cool thing we can do, and make... what's the term for the machine that has all the parts that one lead into another and it's just cobbled together from
the Goldberg machine?
Goldberg machine.
Yeah.
Too much template metaprogramming is like a Rube Goldberg machine.
You know,
not hold that up as the way to do C++. Modern C++ is much more elegant and direct and powerful than that.
This is the 1% versus 99% all over again.
How do you take that?
I don't consider myself in the priesthood, and I'm opposed to this notion. I don't like to tier. I'm a library writer, and you know I'm allowed to do stuff that you know. I don't think this is a sustainable and good model.
By the way, Bjarne vocally says that, so I'm hearing it from you too.
Oh, great!
Saying that I don't think we should talk about application developers and library writers because we do that all the time. Yeah. But to get out of that habit, because everybody's using the same language.
Yeah,
and everybody's writing.
Exactly,
types
and there's all this. And all this leaky abstraction phenomenon definitely happens. And you know, I think it just doesn't resonate well with me. I think all this two-tiered language. The language should be comprehensive and usable for 100% of its users.
So, to the people who would like to have new language features, I would say there was a lot more motivation for that in C++ 98, because it was really missing some stuff. I mean, why on earth can't I do a for each loop? I can do that in Java, and it's very useful, and we know it's useful, and we know how to do it. Why can't I have auto type deduction? Why can't things like that, why can't I have a lambda function? Works great in C#, known to be usable by lots of people, very powerful. And we are a power language, we should have those power features and conveniences. But especially with C++ 11, not to argue that there aren't things we should add, but we have a very powerful and elegant language. We have arguably the most powerful and elegant, most powerful language on the earth for expressing very efficient, tight, low overhead abstraction code. It would be great if we could focus more on using this powerful tool that we have rather than chasing the rainbow of incremental things that we might add that with diminishing returns that serve smaller and smaller niches, arguably. Not to say that there aren't some more things we should add, but I would say we're 80% of the way there of what C++ should become, perhaps on some time scale, say in the next decade or two. Let's focus on the goodness that's there.
Sure. And also, just to say briefly, to comment on that would be, you know, reflecting what's actually happening in the world around you. Yeah. So for example, it sure would be nice to have async in C++. It's when you...
Oh, the await feature, because we have std async,
await,
but like the await feature.
Like yield and friends?
Wouldn't that be nice? Because yeah. When you think about...
It's got to be in the language, if at all. It's not a library thing. So go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was just going
to
say, having done Windows 8 development, which is Windows 8 modern style apps, is very asynchronous in nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's asynchronous, which is great. Yeah. But as a C++ developer, you have to use the PPL, which is a great library with using tasks and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas the C# people get to use async await, and it's so much more elegant.
Now,
no offense to the PPL team.
But that is currently being proposed for standardization, because Microsoft is and our C++ team has been, including people who worked on the C# await feature, are proposing the other half of future, so I'll talk about that more tomorrow. We have the blocking form, which is the .get.wait. We don't have the non-blocking form, which is the .then.when, any when all. So we're proposing adding that. Strong support from the ISO C++ committee right now to pursue that proposal, so we're now going to bring an update in 2 months at the next meeting. But we're also proposing, on top of that, once you have that, you can do that and stop, or you can layer on a language feature called await and resumable functions, which is optional, and there's strong but less strong support for that, because it's a language feature, which is proper. But if you have that, suddenly this thing gets easily 10x more usable, and you get some really sweet and simple concurrent code, which is where we need to get to.
Absolutely. Mm.
So that's an example of where I say we can add some more to C++, but let's focus on things that are for mainstream audiences that help millions of developers rather than are more esoteric. Because we have the power. We don't need more of that kind of power. We need to deliver power in a usable form and solve things that you can't currently do today, especially for concurrency.
Excellent. So I know you guys are tired. We've gone way over the agreed time, but that was my way to actually get you up there. So thank you for doing this. I just want to ask Scott, is there going to be a C++ and Beyond 2013?
Maybe. We haven't talked about it yet. So we'll have to wait and see what develops. As what I said last year was, we discussed it at the end of every one to decide if we want to do another one. And so we'll have discussions and we'll see what happens.
Well, I hope you do. And just for people out there watching, I highly encourage you, if there is, to attend. Because I've gone to many C++ events over the past few years. In fact, putting one on with Herb and Microsoft. And this is definitely one of the best.
Awesome. Top. Thanks, Charles.
I'm glad you like it.
Thank you very much.
People should definitely come to this. So thank you for your time.
Thanks,
and
Charles.
Hopefully
thank you.
See you next year.
All righty. Thank
Thanks
you
very much.
Thanks.
Thank
cool.
you.